Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the PDP call on the 2nd of September. And we have on the call Jeff Newman, the chair, James Bladel, Alex Kukuru, Avery Doria, Paul Diaz, and Tatiana Kramtsova. And for staff, we have Margie Milam, Marika Koenig, and Glenda Saint-Jerry, myself. Thank you, Jeff. Over to you.
Great. Thank you very much, Glenn, and welcome to the September 2nd call of the PDP work team. So just a couple, start with a couple of administrative things and then jump back into the work that we were doing. From an administrative standpoint, we are now on weekly calls. So starting today, obviously, we're meeting now. And then the next call will be on September 9th, then the 16th, 23rd, 30th, and so on. At the same time that we're meeting now, on the last call, we were asked to explore the possibility of having one longer call each of the next 3 months, including September, so September, October, November, in order to try to make some more progress and get to a point where we have a draft or a final report or something of that nature by the meeting in Cartagena. And so we've been looking at some dates, and one of the ideas that we wanted to float by the group was because everyone has this hour and a half block already blocked out, was maybe the notion of on September, I think it was the 23rd, which is 3 weeks from now, is extending the call, starting it a half hour earlier and then ending it an hour later, so you're basically doubling the length of the call to see if that was a possibility. Because of the relatively low amount of people on this call right now, we'll probably just send out an email to see if that works for people. But that was kind of, an easier way to... So people didn't have to find a completely different day and a completely different period to block out. So we'll unless anyone has any comments now, we'll send out an email to see if that works for a good number of people. Any questions on that? Okay. So what I want to do then is to jump back into the document, the public comment tool document that was put out by Marika, and I think now updated to include the registry stakeholder group comments. And on another note, there was one additional comment that was received that Marika informed me about this morning that I have not seen yet that we can update the chart as well. And sorry, there's one last item, and that is that the public comment period is still technically open. We actually had said that we were going to accept comments or that the period was open and that it would be most helpful to receive comments by August 30th, which has come and gone now. At some point, we do need to close the comment period because ICANN does need to do their official public comment summary and post that up on the Internet. So I wanted to kind of throw that out for the group, but I don't know if I'm trying to see here, and Marilyn's not on. I was going to ask her if...
She'll be late.
Right, I did see that note. So when she does come on, if someone can remind me just to ask her if the business if the business constituency is going to submit a comment. And then, Aubrey, are you on?
Yes, I am.
Do you know if the non-commercial stakeholder group is submitting a comment?
I don't believe so.
Okay, so so if you're not, and then I hear from Marilyn that the business constituency is not, then my inclination is to basically leave the comment period open for maybe another week till the 10th.
I will check once again. But I don't believe we have a volunteer to actually write it up. So, but I will check once again.
Okay. Alan?
Yeah, I'm not sure how many more we're going to get in, but I question if there's not some validity in leaving it open. Can we not get the comments that we have summarized, and then any additional ones come in and maybe are summarized again at the end or not? But you know, adding another set of comments to the to a summary would not be all that onerous. It's not a matter of redoing all of the work. So, you know, we can have our cake and eat it effectively. We're going to spend a lot of time over the next N months trying to integrate those comments into our document and closing up all the things that we left saying we still need to discuss this, we still need to discuss that. And I'm just not sure I see the danger of allowing things to come in. It's amazing how many times in conversations in other working groups the issue of what are the PDP rules going to be and we should make sure to cover something, you know, where there's been some problematic issue in the other working group. So I think there's some potential benefit, and I'm not sure I see a lot of downside in keeping it open.
Okay, Marika, do you want to address that?
Yeah, it is, Marika. I mean, I'm happy to leave it open. You know, we normally post the summary analysis when we close the public comment form and it moves to a different section of the website. But I think at this stage, I mean, as the group has the review tool that basically summarizes the different comments, I don't think it's a problem to leave it open and not do the summary analysis that we normally post on the website until, you know, we formally close the forum. And, you know, as the group can, you know, work forward on the basis of this document. So I think it would probably only be helpful if then on the website we do put a date there, so, or, you know, indicate that it keeps on running open to make sure that people understand that they can still submit comments, because I think now we've put preferably by 31st of August, while, of course, for most public comment forums, the date that's posted there is the closing date. So
sure,
maybe we can clarify it there, because, you know, I presume at some point we do need to close it when we're ready to put out, you know, a new document for which we want to open a separate forum, I presume.
Certainly by then, yes.
Okay. Sorry, what was it? When did you say by when?
Before we put a new document out.
Oh. All right. Aubrey, you have a comment on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think leaving it open is probably okay, but I do think that we probably need to close it several weeks before we would be coming out with something new, so that people would have time to, A, stop commenting at some, I mean, stop responding to comments at some point to finish the document, and B, to give Marika or whomever time to actually finish that other document. And there's the piece of finishing that other document, and then our response to it also often includes, these days, including the responses to the comments, you know, fold it into that document, which takes more time. So I think you have to close it well before we're able to call the project, I mean, the work team over, just in order to finish everything that needs to be finished.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would like to announce a closing date, because anyone that is thinking of submitting comments, that may put a little bit of urgency on it. We've already extended it out over a month, and I'm thinking even if we put a closing date of the end of this month, it's at least having a closing date. So I would like to announce it.
I can live with that.
So how does everyone else feel if we just say September, I can't remember, 30 or 31 days in this month?
30.
30, there you go. What if we say September 30th? I'm seeing check marks, so let's do that, Marika. Let's announce the closing of the period for September 30th, that we're actively reviewing comments now, so it's most helpful if you can get in earlier than that, but we're closing it off on September 30th. Okay. Hearing no objection and wanting to move on to talk some substance, let's go back to the document. What you have now on the top, or what you should have now, and you can increase the font size on your own. I think everybody's able to do this for themselves. There, the top part is the excerpt, or is actually the initial report that we put out, and the bottom is the public comment tool, review tool. So I wanted to jump in. We left off on, it should actually say stage one, even though it's chapter three, 3B, which is a comment from the registrar stakeholder group. So if you turn to page 33, or 3 on the review tool, and 33 in the initial report, you will see a 3B. Essentially, the comment was that we had said, or we had made the comment as a group, saying that those requesting issues reports should be encouraged to identify potential outcomes if possible, as long as this would not bias or restrict the working group in its activities and recommendations. The comment from the registrar stakeholder group was that no potential outcomes should be dictated as part of the PDP, though the stakeholder group agrees that a requester should identify potential outcomes if possible without bias. I'm not sure we need to respond to that, or sorry, Paul.
Thanks, Jeff. It's Paul. Look, you know, a bunch of ours, as I went through this after the call last week, I kind of have a trouble going through point by point everything that's been said, because a lot of times I feel like the registrar stakeholder group's comments are somewhat being taken out of context. Effectively, we're agreeing with what's in the report. We should have highlighted, or we didn't highlight, the clause that you mentioned, if possible. But, you know, I kind of would like to go through this very quickly, because unless you see us, or anybody for that matter, having an opposing viewpoint, most often these are just confirming what the working group said and offering support. And this matrix somewhat takes it out of context and often is being spun or built up as opposition in some way, and that's not the case.
Okay, yes, actually I was going to say that these next couple seem exactly what you said, that they don't really require a response because they're kind of agreeing with what we're saying. I think so. The same thing for the 3C, right? That the proposed suggestion, if there's not sufficient information available on issues, does not pass to the next stage, is a reasonable one. So that's again kind of agreeing with what the group said. 3D, if anyone has a comment, just please raise it as we're going, because the ones that sort of agree, I'm going through quickly. Registrars agree that the variety of alternatives should be employed to address concerns. This is, again, another agreeing comment. At the Brussels meeting, this is now my PDP and other activities. A comment was raised that says it's important to distinguish between what constitutes a PDP and other GNSF Council activities that might also result in the creation of working groups or development of charters, but for which no formal process has been defined at this point. So we do, in the report, we have the chart, and I can't remember what page that's on. Maybe, Marika, you can help. It's the beginning, isn't it?
Yes, it's also an executive summary, and it's also at the end of the document.
Which talks about, okay.
So page 19.
Right, page 19. So we really don't go into how to distinguish between, or too much, of how to distinguish between what constitutes a PDP and other NSL Council activity, right? Our scope was really to talk about if it's in the PDP, or, you know, if it's in the scope of a PDP, here's everything that needs or should happen. We don't really distinguish too much about what constitutes something that is a PDP, other than the fact of, you know, if it's something that at some point people believe may result in a consensus policy, it has to go through the PDP process. Otherwise, at some point it needs to go through the PDP process. Otherwise, it could never be, you couldn't establish a capital C consensus, capital P policy according to the contracts. So other than that, I'm not sure we make any other distinctions. Alan?
Well, I'm a little bit befuddled here. If we were writing a cake mix recipe, halfway through we wouldn't say, let's reinforce the differences between a cake and a pie. We're doing rules for PDP. If it comes down a PDP path, if the GNSO calls it a PDP, if they follow the PDP procedures, we're writing the rules about how that happens and what happens afterwards. ICANN has plenty of working groups and other things that do other things that are not PDPs. I don't see how we can delineate all possible alternatives.
Well, so I certainly agree with you that we cannot come up with a hard and fast rule, but do we want, as a group, to provide some guidance to the council? You know, we're supposedly the experts on this issue, so do we want to provide guidance to the council so that, you know, when the council doesn't declare something a PDP or does declare something as a PDP that shouldn't be, you know, we're not, I guess, up in arms. I know this is an issue that a number of people care about, and we don't want, or do we want, the council to have the ultimate discretion and maybe circumvent the PDP process for something that we feel, we as a community feel, should go through something more extensive.
Well,
we may or may not. I'm just asking the question.
Yeah, I don't see how we can stop council from creating a group that does something according to another set of rules if it doesn't end up, if it isn't designed to end up in consensus policy or binding advice to the board. If council decides to set up a informal working group that doesn't follow PDP rules, which will end up with advice to the board, but the board is then not going to be bound by the two-thirds rejection, you know, the vote that it takes to reject it because it hasn't come through a PDP, that's council's business.
Okay.
Consensus policy can only come through a PDP. Other things can take all sorts of forms. The consensus, the PDP binds them to a higher level of acceptance. But other than that, I think it's the GNSO's right to do whatever it wants.
Okay. And
can I throw a comment, Jeff?
Is that Alex? Okay, Alex,
yes,
let me go to Avery, and then I'll come back to you.
Thank you.
Okay, Avery.
Okay, yeah, thanks. I tend to agree with Alan. I think that we have to delineate some line between what is the policy development process that binds the board to its, you know, equivalent three-quarter or whatever the percentage is vote versus all the other recommendations that the council can make that are recommendations that, you know, should be considered, should be talked about, but do not have any binding effect. And we also have to consider that these days, as you know, I think there are three, maybe more, joint multi-SO, SOSC, SOSAC efforts in progress that the GNSO has to be able to come up with charters for those things and such without needing to apply its PDP requirements on everything else for something that is just a set of things that the board needs to consider but is not binding consensus policy anyway. So I think we have to delineate and we have to give guidance on that. Thanks.
Okay, Alex?
Okay, first of all, apologies for jumping in. My Adobe was playing up, so I couldn't raise my hand. I wanted to suggest that since we are a PDP work team, and to avoid being dragged into what is a PDP and other processes, perhaps at the preface of this document, we could define what a PDP is or what PDP we are dealing with or this document is talking about, and therefore anything else that's not defined in our preface of a PDP really are all those other processes, so that we don't start defining GNSO everything else, but we are clearly stating what a PDP constitutes.
Can you repeat that last? I think I missed that last part. Can you repeat that last part again?
We define at the preface what a PDP constitutes. So everything else is not a PDP. I mean, on our document. So anything that is as per our definition of a PDP at the preface of this document is what these rules apply. Anything else, it's not a PDP.
Yes. Okay. So one of the things I was thinking in on that is, do we go into enough detail as to the significance of something being called a PDP versus anything else? And maybe that's a way to handle it. In other words, all the things that, Alan, that you were talking about, do we really emphasize that enough in the report? Margie?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment, because I thought Alan made an interesting point that I'd never thought of in looking at the Annex A. Because Annex A isn't necessarily just for consensus policies, but I think the point that he raised, which was actually pretty insightful, is that if the council wants to apply the, wants to essentially require the board to follow the higher thresholds to not accept the recommendation, then the PDP process applies. That's not a bad concept, and I just wanted to highlight that I've never thought of that before, that might be a useful thing, that the council might want to have a PDP because of that. So I guess my advice is not to try to limit the PDP process to just stuff that creates consensus policies, because there might just be other things that the council might want to fall in that process.
Yeah, and that's where I was going with, maybe, and I agree on Alan's comment, that maybe we can flush that out a little bit more towards the beginning of our report, is to talk about really the significance, to recognize that there's a whole host of ways that the GNSO can conduct its policy management process and to get input, but if they want it to be a consensus policy, or if they want to give it that much more emphasis and put the board in a position where they have to take the advice unless two-thirds or, whatever the rules are, that we really should spell that out more so that council understands and other people in the community understand why we have a PDP process in the first place. Aubrey?
You're right, that's been an ambiguity for a long time. And in many conversations I've had with board members over the years, that is an ambiguity that several of them objected to and felt that the PDP constraint should only apply in the consensus. So I'm not saying we shouldn't do this, but we should be aware that in declaring that, and I think working through the ambiguity is a good thing, whichever side we fall on it, but it's not a thing that, necessarily we should believe that the board is comfortable with, and some of them will see it as a change to have a stronger say over how they behave. So I think we need to be aware of, in working through that ambiguity, that we are giving the council perhaps more control and more say than some believe they have currently. Thanks.
Yes. So, Marika, Margie, it sounds like we think we can then come up with some with the things that were discussed today by Alan and Aubrey and others. Do we think we can come up with a paragraph talking about the significance of a PDP and obviously recognizing that there's other ways that GNSO can do its work, but this is something this group really wanted to clarify as to why something would go through a PDP. Talking about most of the people in the community know that a PDP process is needed for the development of a consensus policy, but here's really other reasons why something would want to go through the PDP and why the council may choose to have something go down this route. Margie?
Yeah, we can try to come up with something like that. It'd be nice, and I don't know how to do this, if we could come up with some sort of term for that? I mean, I know we've got the big consensus policy definition, but is there another definition we can use that for something that comes out of the PDP process that isn't consensus policy necessarily? I don't know the answer to that, but that might help, you know, if anyone has any thoughts on that. Might help in the description, but we'll certainly try to put something together to explain the concern.
Well, Alan's got his hand raised, but it was before you raised your comment, but maybe we can put him on the spot. Alan, if you can't think of a term, don't worry, I'm just kidding. it's your turn.
I don't have a magic word right now, so you're not putting me on the spot because I'm just walking away from it. but I really do like the idea of in a description really early on in the report, making it clear what a PDP is and what a PDP isn't in relation to the subject area. I know we've covered it and it's there, but that's probably something we need to highlight really early on in the process, in the report and in the executive summary. You know, not just gloss over saying it could result in consensus policy and something, but sort of differentiate why a PDP is different from other things if there's not consensus policy involved. So I really like that idea. And yes, we should probably come up with some name. I don't have it at the moment.
Okay, so that's an assignment for everyone, is to come up with a good name to call going through the PDP for an outcome that's got some enhanced weight behind it.
In many cases, I think we're going to find, and we may even find historically, that a PDP comes out with consensus policy and other things. So it's not either all consensus policy or no consensus policy. A combination, I think, is going to become more common because there are typically a problem may need to be addressed in multiple ways.
Well, and I think oftentimes when people think about PDPs, it's always to, you know, as we said, kind of a consensus policy to require registries and registrars to do things. But in essence, you could also have a PDP that wants, the community wants ICANN to do something. You know, and so that could be an outcome of a PDP that maybe the GNSSOC Council wants, the board to have to accept unless it can, by two-thirds with this threshold. So that there
To use a bad example, and I'm not trying to inflame things, if we had managed in Fast Flux to come up with some really salient, important recommendations, chances are they would not fall under the terms of consensus policy. But if we had the insight to do something which we felt was really important, it would not be unreasonable to do it as a PDP. That particular one hasn't worked out quite like that, but nevertheless.
Right. That's true. Okay. I think we've exhausted this one in a good way. We have the action item for this item. There was a comment raised that we need to distinguish between the GNSO Council and GNSO, I believe, as a community, I guess, is what that's really referring to, that these are not synonyms. So we need to be careful. I guess that's a comment for the entire draft, is we just need to go through and make sure that when we mean the council, we say the council, and if we mean the community, that it's really spelled out that we're talking about the community. So that's just kind of a note to the group, and so we'll be looking through that through the report to make sure that we do that. I think that's a good comment. I think we're all guilty of it, whether it's working groups or whether it's the board sometimes does that too. I mean, you'll see letters from the board to the council that talks about the GNSO, sometimes talks about the GNSO council others, and at some point, the GNSO Council interprets it as them as opposed to the community or vice versa. So I think that's a comment that's good for the entire community and not just really for this group. Alan, was this an old hand or is this new?
Yeah, no, this is a new hand. In at large, the term at large is comparable to the GNSO, and the ALAC is comparable to the GNSO Council.
Yeah.
They're spelled quite differently. They look quite different.
Yeah.
The board and everyone else still continually gets them inverted and confused and considers them interchangeable. So, yes, we need to be careful, but it's a losing game, I'm afraid.
Well, at least we can be careful in our report.
Indeed. And, you know, when I write things for at large and for the ALAC, I'm careful also. But at some level, and it's frustrating to some people, it's going to continue to happen no matter how diligent and how many times we reinforce it, even if the terms weren't so similar, and in the GNSO case they are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Someone else, sound like someone wants to raise a comment? Oh, okay. Next comment is on the bylaws, which I think this one is going to be one that we are going to be tackling a bunch over the next few months, and that is really what should go into the bylaws versus what should be left for these rules of procedure in this guidebook that we're going to at some point come out with. And that is really what should the bylaws, what should be hard-coded in the bylaws. And so this comment was that the bylaws should provide high-level overview of the process with further detail going into the rules of procedure. And so I think that's a good comment. I think, I think because, and I'm going to separate myself. This is not a chair comment, but as a contracted party comment, so I'm distinguishing this. As a contracted party, my thought is that because of the fact that our contracts can be modified by the outcome of the PDP process if it results in a consensus policy, that we may have a differing opinion as to what should be hard-coded in the bylaws in order to give the contracted parties comfort that certain things and rules will be followed. It cannot be changed by the council. Those procedures can't be changed by the council without a much higher threshold and board review. So I'll take my contracted party hat off and now as the chair. is there any comments on that provision? It seems like something, again, that we'll just kind of keep note of and something we'll come back to many times. Wolf?
Yes. Thank you, Jeff. Well, I'm wondering what kind of rules of procedure you are talking about or thinking here. Is it the rules of procedure of the council themselves you're thinking, or is it a separate one which refers to the PDP process only? The question why I'm raising that question is, you know, the rules of procedure for the council are also of a general nature for the council, which comprise rules for different things, for voting, for organizational matters, for all of the working matters that the council is doing. So when we refer to the PDP process in that context, so the question is for me whether we should point out or point to a separate chapter here in the rules of procedure, or even create a new rule specifically for the PDP process?
Yeah, so that's a good question that I don't think we really thought through completely. I think what the goal was to hard code certain aspects of the PDP in the bylaws, and that goes through a certain process to be changed, and then to create, and I'll let Marika jump in too, is to create some separate guidebook that maybe would be referenced in the rules of procedure of the council to cover the other elements of the PDP that we thought were important, that should, you know, that the PDP process should follow, but didn't rise to the level of bylaws. And so maybe it's just a reference in the council rules of operation. But I see Marika and Margie and Alan. So let me throw it off to them because I could be completely wrong. So, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think as some of you will have already noticed, there are a lot of changes going on the council rules of procedures at the moment, as many work teams are finishing their work, and that's being incorporated in that in those rules of procedure. And, you know, talking, for example, about the working group guidelines, I think the idea is there to have that incorporated as well, or an integral part of the rules of procedures as an annex, so that's part of the same document. And my feeling is that this, you know, the same would be expected for the PDP rules of procedures, as they are supposed to be seen as well an integral part of the rules of procedure. We probably need to see, depending on how long the document is, whether indeed it gets integrated into rules of procedure or whether there's as well a separate annex that can be added, where, you know, that can be taken out separately for PDP working groups to review. But I think that's as far as I know the intention. But I'll let Margie comment on that if I got that wrong.
Margie?
Yeah, this is Margie. That's right. We were thinking of including it in the operating rules and procedures. I'm not really clear on whether we prefer it to be an annex or a part of the actual body. I'm not really sure it matters. But the idea being that there would be just one document that has everything. It has the operating rules and procedures. It has the working group guidelines. It has the details on the policy development process. And as you guys may recall, the bylaws state that the operating rules and procedures are subject to board oversight and review. So, you know, to the extent that those get changed, and there's at least an oversight responsibility on the board to make sure that they're not arbitrary in any way.
Right, but there's just to clarify, there's no vote by the board. The board will get a copy of it. They'll have time to review, and they can do nothing, and it still goes into place. Right.
That's
so,
right. I assume, though, when we finally finish the process of coming up with the new PDP rules and the new bylaws, that we would present the whole thing as a package. So at least they would, you know, at least for the very first go around, they would approve the bylaw, you know, whatever annex A is going to look like, plus the manual that deals with the PDP procedures that would get incorporated in the operating rules and procedures, so that they're doing their job and making sure the restructuring was done in a way that satisfied their request and all of the work that's been done for the last few years.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. I think that'll be good. One of the things I'd like to see also, this is much further down the line, is to see kind of a for lack of better words, a PDP for dummies type manual that's not in legalese like the operating rules of procedure, but that's really in kind of, or bylaws, but that's really kind of in a term that new people to working groups can read and understand and not have to juggle through all this ICANN speak and legalese in order to understand how the process works. Now, I know that may be a utopian goal, but that would be a nice outcome at some point as well. Alan and then Wolf.
Yeah, this is an interesting discussion that perhaps we should have had earlier, but I'm not sure we understood enough about the process and our thoughts to have it earlier. The more I think about it, what we probably might want to consider, will increase our work to do it, is put the full rules of procedure in, or the full PDP process in the rules of procedure. And in the bylaws, have a set of, I won't say just principles, but principles and constraints. So the bylaws require that there be sufficient or reasonable public consultation during the process, and we can quantify that. The bylaws require that all stakeholder groups and other participants have equitable access to the discussion process, and a number of things like that. But we don't need to actually specify the details in the bylaws. I think if we specify those principles and constraints, they then have to be honored in writing the rules, but the rules don't need to be detailed at all in the bylaws. And I haven't thought this through because I've just come up the concept as we were talking. But that strikes me as you can have something pretty clean in the bylaws. They're not going to change, and yet they will give comfort to the contracted parties that the process will be something which will allow fair discussion and reasonable community input. I've stunned everybody.
No, I think it's definitely an interesting concept.
We certainly haven't thought of it so far, and we're not ready to write it like that, but it may be doable. I'm not 100% sure.
So let's, Margie.
Can I ask you to repeat that? I got lost.
Alan, can you repeat that?
I can try. Instead of having a detailed set of rules in the bylaws, or trying to extract half of the rules, the ones that we think are the important ones to be in the bylaws, and the rest in the rules of procedure, in the bylaws have a set of principles and or constraints on the process, and they would include things like, in a quantified way, that there must be sufficient public consultation in the process. There must be an opportunity for various stakeholder groups and constituencies to be involved in the process in order for it to be labeled, this is a PDP. This outcome can bind contracted parties and binds the board to a large extent. But we don't need to go further in the bylaws than those principles and constraints. The actual implementation, which says there shall be an end day or at least an end date, common period at certain particular junctions, and this is exactly, we're pointing to exactly the working group rules. That takes out of the bylaws, for instance, the statement that it must be a formal working group, capital W, capital G, which we've discussed, may 2 years from now may not be the way of choice within ICANN. But keeps in the principle that whatever the format, it must have, there must be a way for people to reasonably participate.
Thanks.
Okay, so, Marika, can you just make sure that that's noted? And again, these are things that I think are overarching questions that as we go through each area, we should be thinking in those terms as to I don't want to say important enough because that's not really, I don't mean to de-emphasize other things, but certainly what things people think rise to the threshold level of bylaws versus what should be in the rules of operation, and then the idea that Alan has kind of put forth, which is, and maybe the bylaws are only about principles as opposed to specifics like it needs to be a working group, capital WG, or the time period needs to be X number of days, things that are in the bylaws today. Let me go to Wolf and then to Marika and Margie.
Yes, Wolf speaking. Coming back to what Marika was saying, so there was a lot of changes done within the last month with regards to the bylaws and the rules of procedures, and I'm at the moment not familiar with all of the changes. I don't remember all of them. I was also working for the rules of procedures as Avery as well, but there are a lot of details and there are some elements with regards to the PDP process and in the bylaws and in the rules of procedures already. So what I would like to just suggest is whether we could have or could create a kind of status what at the time being in both parts, in the bylaws and in the rules of procedures, which elements are covered by that, and then reflect in our discussion here how we should post it then to the future. I think in general I can agree to that comment, that in the bylaws there should be the high-level principles should be covered by them, and the others should be covered by the rules of procedures or anywhere. But at first, I need a picture. Thanks.
Thanks, Wolf. And let me go to Marika and Margie.
Yeah, this is Marika. First, to comment or respond to Wolf's comment. As far as I know, what is related to the what is in the rules of procedure currently in relation to PDP is just a copy and paste of what is in Annex A. I don't think at the time the rules of procedure were developed. You know, it was at the beginning of the PDP, and no further information was known. And I think part of what we're trying to do now is that a lot of the elements that are hard coded in the bylaws are difficult to change and difficult to adapt, where I think in our discussions we've seen that in certain areas there's a need for more flexibility, or depending on the kind of issue you're dealing with, you might want to add more steps or less steps. And I think what we're talking about is trying to work out what is that balance of which elements indeed should be mandatory and therefore outlined in the bylaws to a certain extent. But some of the details of that, or maybe additional steps, those are then to be worked out in the rules of procedure. And I think, on the basis of the discussions we had, I guess in some elements, we see clearly what needs to go to those rules of procedure and provide guidance to working groups. And I think as well, this is information that we're taking back as already mentioned in one of the previous calls, we are already working with the ICANN legal team to come together, to come up with some kind of skeleton based on, the initial recommendations that the work team has developed. And based as well on the discussions we're having now on providing some kind of framework that indeed would, provide the work team with those elements. And, I think there's a flexibility to move that around to see what would go in the annex and what would go, to the rules of procedure. But I think based on the discussion here, it looks like that, some of the core principles need to go then to the annex, but the more detailed parts go to the rules of procedure. So that's something we're working on, behind the scenes at the moment, and we hope to come back with you with some proposals, in the near future that will hopefully, help further the discussion on that.
Okay. Thanks, Marika. Margie?
I'm basically going to say the same thing Marika was saying. And to answer Wolf's concern, I think it would be helpful for you to see the actual, suggested language for the policy development manual, because then you can see everything, you can see the logic, you can see the process, and then also from that pull out what seems to be the principles that would need to go into the bylaws. But I think it's kind of hard in a vacuum to envision what those documents would look like. So we're trying to prepare those and get them to you guys so you can take a look at it and evaluate it. But I do think Alan's approach seems to, make sense as having the bylaws reflect principles and, in a sense, bare minimums that are required if you need to have, if you're trying to get a consensus policy through.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Margie. Any other comments on this particular item? I think this has been a really good discussion. Again, it's kind of one of those overarching issues that we need to think about throughout the next few months, and especially when we do write whatever it is that's going to go into the bylaws. All right, the next comment was from the registries, and it's a fairly long one, but it goes on to say that the registry stakeholder group notes that the PDP flowchart, the one that is on page 19, shows the initiation of a PDP prior to the creation of a drafting team to develop the working group charter. In recent GNSO PDPs, it appears helpful to have a draft charter prepared before initiating the PDP, but then makes it easier to decide whether a PDP should be initiated because the desired objectives and deliverables are defined. So we'll just stop on that comment. So one of the things I thought maybe we did make this clear was, and I didn't have too much involvement in the registry stakeholder group comments, just because of this role, I wanted them to produce their objective comments without my input. Well, I had a little bit of input, but really I wanted them to look at the report and make comments based on the report as opposed to based on what I may say about interpretations of what's in it. So one of the things that, you know, I thought we were kind of, we did, or maybe it wasn't clear enough, was we really wanted to preserve, even though in the flow chart it may look as the registries say, we wanted to be clear that it could be either before or after, that we really didn't mandate in this group, that we wanted flexibility, that they could choose to do it before or they could choose to do it after. Is that, Marika, am I misremembering that or not remembering that correctly? Alex?
Yes, Alex speaking. I think what this comment is throwing us to is to go into the rules of procedure. The matter that are being raised here are not the actual development of the PDP, because if we go into the how the appointment of the drafting team is going to do and how the approval of the charter for the work team, rather than the actual development of the PDP, I tend to feel like some of the issues that are being raised could be better served if they're in the rules of procedure for the GNSO Council, which would then give them the flexibility you are talking about. Thanks.
This is an element you said should be more in rules of procedure to preserve that flexibility. Is that the main comment?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. And I think that's. Does anyone have a comment on that? This is more should be a guideline, or that these should be guidelines. That we shouldn't mandate one way. I think that's right. I think that's kind of the nature of what we discussed when we were discussing this issue. So it's hard to do on a flow chart, and maybe our response to this comment is that it's hard to draw a flow chart, but, yes, this could be done either prior to or after the initiation of a PDP. We didn't mean for the flow chart to be prescriptive, to have only one way of doing this. I think that's our response to this. In the next one, and this is something we actually talked about a bunch within this group, is the different whether to have a different or same threshold for the adoption of a charter and the initiation of a PDP. And so the registry's comment was they restate what the thresholds are, and then they say it might be simpler to apply the default threshold for the charter, which is a simple majority of each house. And just to refresh our recollection on why we have the same one was because we thought it could be gamed. We thought that a PDP for the approval or for the initiation of a PDP required a supermajority. Maybe I'm thinking of this backwards here. Sorry, I'm going back in my mind thinking about this issue, that if it was only a majority that was required for it actually doesn't work in this case. Sorry, I'm going through thinking about, you know, how it could be blocked. But there was the reason we said is we thought the charter could define things within the scope of the PDP that we all considered were important enough that should have the same threshold, because you could really, to initiate the PDP, if you don't know what the charter is at the time you initiate it, right, it could be approved as one package, right? If it's approved as one package, then, the same threshold, it was easy to apply. If you did it after the fact, I guess some people worried about the scope could be greater than what the initial people voted on to initiate the PDP. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. The gaming element we discussed is that as the threshold for initiating a PDP or initiating a PDP is very low, the vote on the charter could be abused if you would go for a simple majority vote, because you're basically run the risk that those that didn't want to initiate the PDP will vote against, and you run into a stalemate where you have a working group but no, or a PDP initiated but no charter approved. So I think that's, I recall that was the reason why the work team said it would be best to apply the same voting thresholds, because you assume that those that initiated the PDP would also vote in favor of a charter for that PDP working group.
That's exactly right. Yes, thank you. That's right. Because I was thinking of vote to approve a PDP, and that's why things weren't making sense in my head. Yes, the threshold for initiating a PDP is low. It's 33% of each house, or more than 66% of one house. To make the threshold higher for the charter, you're exactly right, could force a situation where we have an initiation of PDP, but not a charter, and therefore could be gamed in that respect. Exactly right. So I think that's kind of our response. Well, do people still feel this way, or has this comment made people rethink that? All right, hearing no discussion, either everyone's asleep or everyone totally agrees. So I think that's our response to that comment. Alan?
Yeah, no, I'll just agree. I think we have to avoid that level of gaming. There's a number of ways of addressing that, but certainly we can't have a higher threshold to approve than we did to create the PDP. That just puts us in a situation where, the parts of the council are saying, yeah, we let you create the PDP, but now try to do any work, and that's not tenable.
Right, and that was almost the situation in the vertical integration. Right, that it got very close to getting to a point of a PDP being initiated, but no charter approved. That didn't happen, but it came very close to that happening.
Well, I'll note in several times recently, council has I won't use the term micromanaged, but has looked at the very details of each sentence and reworded it 49 times, so it's not as if the council is rubber stamping these things.
Right. Okay, now we're going to specific. So those were general comments that were received.
As I was talking about this, given the council has been reworking these things as it goes along, does that mean a motion to amend what threshold is for that? Is there for that?
Motion to amend a charter?
To amend the wording of a charter. Someone puts a motion before council to adopt the charter. Someone says, "I move to change the wording in that motion."
I think that's just an ordinary motion from the council. I would think that's just a majority.
This Rick, I think we did have some wording on that in the report, where I think we talk about where substantial changes, like such as scope, would require a higher threshold than simple changes that would just be changing of the deadline or those kind of things. I think we have it. I need to look up where we talk about that, but I think we did cover.
Okay. Then I need to go back and look at that.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, Marika, if you could look that up and just send out an email on what that was.
Yes, I'll do so.
Aubrey, sorry.
That's okay. A quick comment on that one. I think there's two different issues that just got talked about, unless I'm totally confused. There's the one that you have the charter motion in front of the council, and someone says, I would like to amend the charter to say this, in line 14. As opposed to that in line 14. And in that case, I think that, as you said, that would just, and it isn't the so-called friendly amendment that the council accepts, but it is, say, no, we need to vote on it. I think in that case, you're talking about something that would probably be a majority, a regular council vote, because it is the amendment of a motion. It isn't the creation of a charter. you're still going to vote on the charter with the full body. I think that the thing that we have in this document is when a working group or some other party comes back with, we need to change our task, we would like to add another task, or we would like to, you know, we finished the first three and we would like to do four new things. That is a different issue, and I think it's that issue, if I remember correctly, that we discussed in the document, not how, maybe I'm just misremembering, not how the process would go in a regular council meeting where the council's just wordsmithing, you know, and changing the proposed charter.
I seem to recall that, like, that it was amending an already approved charter, not...
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I seem to recall, too. Marika, does that gel with what you remember?
I'm trying to find the relevant section, so I hope to get that in the chat shortly.
But
I think we did speak about both, the initial vote on the charter, which I think where we did say that it should be adopted by the same threshold as the initiation, as well as amending a charter that was already adopted.
Oh, okay.
Right.
But doesn't that mean if, let's say a PDP was approved with just a third of the council approving, which meant two-thirds disagreed, that says that the majority of council can set completely ludicrous charter terms and approve them with their third.
And so basically the sovereign again. So you could then basically poison pill a charter.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're right.
You can, but then getting it approved is going to be a lot harder.
Well, no, getting it approved is easy. You if it all it requires is the one-third to get it approved, the one-third who disagreed, the two-thirds who disagreed on the PDP, on the PDP existing, can easily approve the fake charter.
Yeah.
Well, I think we talked about competing charters, didn't we? Didn't we have a discussion of competing charters?
Yes, we did have a discussion on that, but I don't recall exactly what we decided on that. I'm still trying to dig it out.
Let's go back to our notes. When I was talking about approved, I meant, you know, like, it may only take a third to approve a charter or to approve initiation of a PDP, but in the end, the recommendations need to be approved by the much higher threshold.
Oh, indeed, but by setting the right charter, you can make sure that nothing comes out of it. Nothing substantive comes out of it.
Right. Or you can poison pill it so that now people can't vote for it anymore.
I think we said it's a low threshold, and then if you have competing charters, that it would have to be, the council would have to, by majority, pick one of them. But I could be wrong. I'm remembering.
But council doesn't vote between two charters. Council always has a vote to approve or reject. So you can do them in series.
Right, but if you, well...
Hey, Jeff, it's Margie.
Yeah.
May I comment?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I had raised this back when we had this discussion because we actually had this issue on vertical integration charter for a while, and I raised the issue that you could have two motions that pass on a lower threshold. But you just, you said it, and I, you know, I think I disagree. I think I agree with what you said at the time was that that's too complicated to address, and really that the GNSO should just work it out. And you were okay with the possibility that, or not you, but the group seems to be okay that the possibility that you might have two competing charters that both pass, so that it was just something that the GNSO would have, you know, would have to work through, and there's no need to go into that much detail.
I guess I wasn't worried about the two competing charters. I was worried about the majority of the council who didn't agree with the PDP now has full control over what the charter is.
Well, I'm not sure that that's the case, right? Because if the third that approved it wants to draft their own charter, they could approve that charter, too, and have it say whatever they want it to say.
Okay, yeah, okay, fine.
So it's kind of gaining on either side.
You can certainly end up charterless.
Right, I think, yeah, now I seem to recall what Margie said. We kind of just said the council needs to grow up and figure it out on their own. And if there's a breakdown in the council process, then you know, that's bigger issues. Alex?
Absolutely. I was just going to echo the same thing, because I remember we said we can't manage them. They have to make the decision. And in the context, or in regard to two competing charters, if quote-unquote, if they're competing, then I believe each side could pass theirs and use the same tactics on the other, and then pass each of the charters and then try to use their tactics of defeating against the other. So I think that's why we left it to the council to also make that decision and their call. So I do remember what Maggie had said, absolutely. Thanks.
Yep, I think that's right, Alex. Marika?
Yeah, it is, Marika. I've posted in the chat the relevant note from our report on the discussion on the charter. I haven't been able to find yet, because I do recall that we had the discussion on amending the charter, but now I'm not 100% sure whether it was in this group or whether that was in the working group guidelines or the working group work team discussion, where I do recall there's indeed this notion that, you know, any substantial changes to a charter should be approved by a kind of, you know, supermajority vote, while, you know, minor changes should be approved by a normal vote. But I'll try to find where that language is and send that to the mailing list.
Marika, and what you just posted, the last sentence is, the work team also discussed potentially having a default rule of a majority vote of both houses to approve any changes or modifications to the charter, but no agreement was reached yet.
All right, so then probably as part of that discussion, because I think I remember, I think, James, it was you that was making that argument that, you know, any substantial changes, for example, that would change the scope of the working group should have a higher threshold than, you know, minor changes, you know, changing the timeline or when the report is delivered. But I guess that was part of our discussion, and you know, we didn't reach agreement on it, and that's why it's not captured in further detail here.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that.
Sounds so enthusiastic about it. Maybe we should try to reach agreement on this issue. It's So, James, let me start with let's pretend it's not a scope issue at this point. Should we just recommend what we said in the report, that for normal modifications or changes to the charter, it should be a majority of the council as opposed to the low threshold that it was initiating it? Does anyone object to that rule?
Well, I'm just trying to think, Jeff, this is James speaking. I just jumped in the queue here, but I'm trying to search back my memory, and I was thinking that we were discussing that changes to the charter can indicate something that possibly was overlooked or omitted or possibly going against the intentions, you know, of the original vote to kick off the PDP, so... Am I remembering this correctly? That was kind of why I was thinking that should be a higher threshold than the original.
Right. So the original was 33%, or if it was out of scope, it's 75%. And we said the same thing would apply to the approval of the charter. Now we're talking about amending it. So in the normal circumstance of amending a charter, the 50% required of both houses is greater than the 33% required of both houses. And so it would be a greater threshold to change the charter. Although I guess in the case of if it was out of scope, it would be less.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is we would have to bump that up somehow, too. It almost has to be unanimous.
Or at least the same amount. We could bifurcate it. Say if it was in scope, then it's the 50%. If it was deemed to be out of scope, then...
Was in scope, the original charter or the proposed amendment?
Good question. We'd not bifurcate it that way.
Maybe Alan can...
Alan?
Yeah, the in scope or out of scope is on the issue. presumably the PDP that you're chartering has to be focusing on the issue that the issues report was about. Although we've had PDPs that focus on part of an issues report, I guess. But nevertheless, it's the issue that's in scope, or not the PDP or the charter. I'm starting to feel all very uneasy on this, that because our rules are set up assuming everyone is doing these things in good faith, and if they lost one vote, then they're not going to try to win through a back door. If that's not true, then we have some real problems here, and I'm not quite sure how we address them.
I think we're going to have to assume, for the most part, good faith. Because if we start assuming too much in the way of gaming, we're going to get down a rat hole. Because there's a lot of theoreticals. But I think it's fair to consider the gaming of, you know, initiating a PDP versus approval of a charter, and you don't necessarily want a higher threshold for the approval of a charter, because that's a gaming situation that I'm not sure is bad faith. I think it's just inevitable outcome of the two-thirds that may not have supported it are not going to support the charter. That's not gaming. That's just the way it is. But if you start thinking about who's going to do backdoor this and game and come out with this competing, to me that's kind of, we're going to go down a huge rat hole.
Well, indeed, and that's what I was saying.
Right. So on the topic of modification to a charter, I think our general rule, which probably still sounds like the best default rule, is to go to a normal majority vote of the council. Number one, it's easy to justify. It's the simplest way the council normally acts. Now, on the issue of what if the modification purports to enhance the scope
or restrict the scope,
or restrict the scope. We do have a higher threshold of being 50% regardless.
I mean, the danger is that those who didn't want the PDP at all will restrict the scope so that the PDP does not yield the undesirable results they were worried about.
Well, I suppose that could have happened over the years anyway, and it hasn't happened. Right? Today,
as the stakes get bigger, it happens. Yeah, I think it will happen.
Well, the stakes are pretty big for the vertical integration working group. And you can't get much bigger than that. And I think the council has, at any time, could have introduced an amendment approved by 50% that would have restricted. I mean, I can't think of another issue that ICANN has tackled with such a big scope. Such a big...
But there's no united front on that one. Everyone is divided.
Yeah, it's a different type of division. It's a division by those who want SLBs and those that don't. It doesn't break down into the...
It's not by stakeholder group.
Or I should say those who want SLBs and those that don't. I think those who want SLBs and those who want to be a part of a new CLD versus those that may not.
Let's not try to define that here. We don't need to.
Right. I just wanted to clarify.
I mean,
after
I have strong views, and I neither want to be part of a PDP nor don't want to be.
I actually thought you meant that many of the people were divided and were of several minds for each person.
Well, that's true, too.
All right.
I certainly qualify.
We're kind of... getting towards the last 10 minutes of the call, and maybe this is a good breaking point before we get into the specific relating to recommendation numbers. Anyone have any last comments on anything we talked about today?
only that we're really good at digging rat holes.
Yes. So let's have Marika will type up the notes on today's meeting. We can all see it in writing and then comment on it on the list just to make sure that we that all of our thoughts are there. The next call is a week from today, same time. And remember, we'll send around a note, but we'd like to try to have a longer call later on in the month, September 23rd, Thursday, just extending this call by moving it a half hour earlier and extending it out an hour to make it a three-hour call. So we'll send a note on that. All right. Sorry, Aubrey?
Yeah, sorry, I got my two things. One is, I did send out a plea to the NCSG saying, hey, folks, we really got to comment on this. So hopefully I'll get something. And B, I will probably miss the next 2 weeks' worth of meetings because I'm going to be working secretariat of the IGF. And unless the meeting is late at night, Vilnius time, I probably won't be able to attend. So I just want to let people know that up front, that I still care and I'll still try to send email. But the next 2 weeks for me are worse than an ICANN meeting.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the heads up. And yeah, I think, you know, the next, we're just going to keep going through the issues. So if you have comments on those, send them by email. That would be great.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Alan, is this a new one or is this a left-up hand?
Oh, it's a left-up hand. Sorry.
That's okay. All right. We'll talk to you guys next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.